Okay, so we're a couple of minutes past 6:30. I can see that some people are still trickling in, but we're just going to go ahead and get started. Okay, so good evening, all. I am Chelsea Brennigan. Chelsea, Chelsea Brennigan, B as in boy, Renegan, and I am a tax policy specialist with the Interpretations and Technical Advice Division with the Department of Revenue. I will be the facilitator of this public meeting. It is currently 6:34 p.m. on November 15th, 2021. Obviously, with the current coronavirus situation, this is a very challenging time, and we'd like to thank you all for taking the time to attend this meeting and to provide us with your feedback. Please note that we are best able to consider your comments if you provide them to us in writing, which can be sent to me at chelseab@dur.wa.gov. We will now begin the public meeting for solicitation of comments regarding the proposed language for the Working Families Tax Credit Rule. This rule is currently untitled and has not yet been assigned an administrative code number. Other persons present for this meeting include Atif Aziz in his role as the department's rules coordinator, who will also be monitoring our recording equipment this evening as this meeting is being recorded. Michael Bailey, who is the assistant director of the Working Families Tax Credit Division. Andy Van Gerpen, who is the program manager of the Working Families Tax Credit Division, and Tim Jenrich, who is the assistant director of the Interpretations and Technical Advice Division. Due to the current COVID-19 pandemic, we are conducting this meeting electronically, and we do not have other parties physically present for this meeting. It looks as though we do have other participants on the call for this meeting. So what I will do now is I will read down the list of participants and ask you for the record to please identify yourself. And if you are representing someone, please state who you are representing and also whether you have comments that you would like to make later on. So going down the list, Denise.
Hello, I am here just as an individual, and yes, I plan on making comments later this evening.
Great. Thank you so much. Diana?
Hi, this is Deanna. Yes, same as Denise, I do plan to make a public comment.
Great. Thank you. Emily?
Hi there, Emily Bananek. I do plan on making public comment. I'm here representing the Washington State Budget and Policy Center and the Working Families Tax Credit Coalition.
Great, thank you. Joseph?
Hi, yes, this is Joseph Lachman. I would like to make a public comment later on, and I'm here representing Asian Counseling and Referral Service.
Great, thank you. Lisa? Lisa, I think you might be muted. Well, we'll circle back to Lisa. Hopefully, we can get the technical issues figured out. So let's go on to Margaret.
Hi, yes, Margaret Babayan for the record. I am also representing the Washington State Budget and Policy Center.
Great. And do you intend to make any comments?
Yes, I do. Sorry, it was a little bit of a lag and I forgot.
No problem. Thank you. And Morgan? Morgan Follett. Okay, it looks like we might still be having some technical issues. And I see too that we just had another person enter the meeting. Kristen, I believe. So at this point, Kristen, we've undergone the meeting and we're now asking that for the record, if you could please identify yourself and if you are representing someone, if you could please state who you are representing and whether you will have any comments to make for the record later on.
Hi, I'm Kristen, I represent Faith Action Network. And I likely will be commenting later. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Looks like Morgan was able to unmute themselves. Morgan, if you could please state for the record, identify yourself and if you're representing someone and who you are representing and whether you have any comments.
Hi, yes, Morgan Follett. I am representing just myself and I do not plan to make public comment.
Great, thank you. See, and were we able to resolve the technical issues, Lisa? Okay, looks like we weren't able to resolve the technical issues yet. If you are able to unmute yourself later on, you could just state your name for the record, and if you are representing yourself, we'll get that information later on. Apologies. So continuing on, so due to rulemaking requirements, participants at the public meeting who have comments must make their comments verbally. We will not be reviewing questions or comments provided in the chat function for this meeting. If you do not feel comfortable voicing your comments during this meeting, we suggest that you email your comments to me in writing at chelseab@dor.wa.gov. This public meeting is being conducted pursuant to the provisions of Chapter 34.05 RCW, the Administrative Procedure Act. The purpose of this meeting is to solicit comments from the public on possible rulemaking prior to taking action to propose a new rule. This meeting was announced through publication in the State Register as WSR 21-22-033, which was filed with the Code Revisor on October 26, 2021. There is not yet a proposed draft of this rule. We will be presenting a general proposed outline of this rule. We will consider any comments received pertaining to the proposed rule draft. We appreciate receiving written comments and will evaluate all comments as we proceed with the rulemaking process. Again, you may send written comments to the attention of myself, Chelsea Brennigan. I spell that C-H-E-L-S-E-A, Brennigan, B as in boy, R-E-N-E-G-A-N, at the following email address. chelseab@dor.wa.gov. In this way, the department can fully consider your comments before proceeding with future rulemaking activities. And if you could please mute yourself, that would be very much appreciated. I will briefly outline some of the key points of the department proposes to address in this rule. The purpose of this rule will be to clarify eligibility requirements and program administration standards, including application submission procedures. As there is no rule currently in place, I will pause and request comments after each section. The department intends to craft this rule to ensure consistency with statutory language and to provide additional detail regarding the processes and procedures. So I know that we have several additional people who came into the meeting. So before we begin in earnest, I'd like to go back and request that we have the callers who came in to, if they could please, for the record, please unmute yourself and identify yourself. And if you are representing someone, please state who you are representing and whether you have comments that you would like to make later. So we have a couple of phone numbers that have entered. If we could have a phone number at 813-263-5373. If you could please identify yourself and state if you are representing someone and whether you have comments that you would like to make later.
Hi, yes, this is Kalima Jama. I'm with the Washington State Coalition Against Domestic Violence. I'm here with the WFTC Coalition. I'm just here to take notes and back to our team back at Wiskidus. So I don't have any comments to make at this moment. Thank you, though.
Great. Thank you so much. All right. And I think that was that. All right. So, and maybe Eleanor?
Yes. My name is Eleanor Graham. I'm with the Washington chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. And I was able to participate in one of the listening sessions. And I really urge you, when you're thinking about community outreach, to try to connect into primary care practices that take care of children, especially children whose families are lower income and on Medicaid, because they can often provide a lot of assistance to families in terms of giving them information about the Working Family Tax Credit and how to apply for it.
Thank you, Eleanor. That's very much appreciated. And so we will be specifically requesting comments later on specific to certain requirements and the rule as we've laid out. But I do urge you to submit your comments to me in writing. Again, that's at chelseab@dor.wa.gov. I believe also Abigail has just entered as well. So Abigail, for the record, if you could please identify yourself, and if you are representing someone, if you could please state who you are representing and whether you have comments that you would like to make for the record later on, that would be very much appreciated.
Hi there, sorry I'm late. My name is Abigail Leong, for the record, and I'm here representing Fuse Washington's Communications Hub. I don't foresee having comments, but I'll drop a written comment if I have one. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I think to Maya, I might have missed you previously. Apologies if I did.
No worries. Hi, I'm Maya. She, her pronouns, Maya Manus, M-A-N-U-S, for the record. And I'm representing the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle, as well as the Working Families Tax Credit Coalition. I do not see myself having comments at this time, but may in the future. So thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. I think that might be everyone. And I would ask that if you are not speaking, if you could just put yourself on mute, that'd be very much appreciated. So going into the rule, the department intends to craft this rule to ensure consistency with statutory language and to provide additional detail regarding the processes and procedures. In doing that, we will first go over the eligibility requirements for the Working Families Tax Credit. So to be eligible for the Working Families Tax Credit, the Working Families Tax Credit Division is considering proposing that all individuals applying for the credit must fulfill the following requirements as noted. First, the applicant's spouse, if they are married, and any claimed qualifying children must have a valid Social Security number or individual taxpayer identification number, or ITIN. Second, the applicant and the applicant's spouse, if they are filing jointly, must file a federal income tax return for the period for which the remittance is being claimed. Three, the applicant, the applicant's spouse, if they are married, and any qualifying children must be residents of Washington for more than 180 days during the year for which the credit is being claimed. 4, the applicant and the applicant's spouse, if they are married, must be eligible for the federal earned income tax credit, including meeting the federal income thresholds. The one exception to this requirement is that it is not necessary for the applicant, the applicant's spouse, if they are married, or the qualifying children claimed on the application to have a valid Social Security number, so long as they have a valid ITIN. The federal income thresholds are then subject to the reductions as laid out under the Working Families Tax Credit Statute, which determines the amount of the credit the applicant is eligible to receive. And finally, 5, the applicant or the applicant's spouse must have paid some amount of sales or use tax during the period for which the credit is being claimed. So at this time, we'd like to hear any comments on the eligibility requirements that we've just listed after you've identified yourself for the record. Also remember, as mentioned earlier, we are best able to consider your comments in the rulemaking process if you provide them to us in writing, again, to chelseab@dor.wa.gov. Thank you. Are there any comments on the eligibility requirements that I just listed?
I'm sorry, Chelsea, could you repeat the question? You want comments on the eligibility requirements that is already in statute?
Yes, I just want to have any comments or if you have any feedback regarding these eligibility requirements or if there's anything else that we should consider.
Oh, okay. I have no comments on that.
Great. Thanks. Okay, so hearing no comments, we will be continuing on with the department's processes and procedures. So next, we will be discussing allowable documents. So the department will be providing clarification regarding acceptable documentation to establish the following. First, we will review proof of identity. So per the listening sessions, there were comments suggesting the following items to be used to establish proof of identity. We were provided with the Washington driver's license, a passport, a government employee ID card, a student ID card, a work ID card or badge, a green card, a Social Security card, utility bills or pay stubs, medical records, foreign identification, birth certificate, any piece of mail with the applicant's name and address on it, an ITIN card or verification letter, or identification or authentication of identity from a parent or family member. So please note that the Working Families Division proposes to require a photo ID to establish proof of identity. Is there a reason that this may not be preferable or may pose to be a significant impediment to those applying for the credit? I will now open the floor to comments. And again, please be sure to identify yourself for the record.
Hi, my name is Margaret Balayan for the record. And I will just repeat back that the proposal is to require a photo ID for proof of identity and whether this would cause significant impediment for people applying. I agree that whatever proof of identity should include a name and a photograph, but I will name that for certain applicants, for example, people experiencing homelessness, it might be difficult to produce an ID. And I would recommend that the department consider other forms of ID that have name and photos, and perhaps it's not able to be issued by the state, for example, with the photo, official photo ID, to have some sort of point system for other forms of ID, such as a school ID or a work badge, to reduce barriers for applicants.
Thanks, Margaret. would you be able to provide your comments in writing?
Yes, I'm happy to follow up. I will ask, what is the deadline for public comments? I know many folks we work with were not able to attend this meeting and would also like to submit written comments.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll be going over the timeline briefly at the end of this meeting, but in general, we anticipate if you can provide comments before December 31st of 2021, we can hope then to incorporate those comments as necessary or appropriate into our preliminary version of this draft.
Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else have comments regarding proof of identity?
Hi there. For the record, this is Emily Vananik. I am echoing the comment made by Margaret that there should be exemptions for certain scenarios, including someone experiencing homelessness who may not have access to a photo ID or document that is listed.
Thank you, Emily. And again, too, if you wouldn't mind providing your comments in writing, that would be very much appreciated.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Hi, this is Joseph Lockman with Asian Counseling Referral Service, also echoing the comments from Margaret and Emily. ACRS serves a large population, or folks, many of whom are experiencing homelessness and access our food bank, for example. We've been serving hundreds and actually sometimes thousands of folks who are struggling in that regard, and many of them also struggle producing these forms of IDs. And I would echo that again, the same comments as Margaret and Emily, and I am happy, of course, to send a follow-up to have this in writing as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I very much appreciate it. Any additional comments? Okay. Hearing none, we will move on to establishing proof of residency. So per the listening session, we were provided with several comments suggesting the following documents in order to establish proof of residency: a Washington driver's license or ID card, utility bills, rent receipts, landlord statements, rental agreements or lease agreements, mortgage statements, public benefits verification letters or statements, testimonials or affidavits, community-based organization letters of recommendation, vouchers, or testimonials, school records, a doctor statement, proof of Washington employment, or just simply a list of addresses. So please note that the division proposes to allow multiple forms of documentation to verify the residency requirement. Are there any additional documents that the department should consider when determining residency other than those that I just mentioned? I will now open the floor for comments. And again, please be sure to identify yourself for the record.
This is Emily Vananik, commenting on this section. I would only add, and maybe I missed this in the slew of options, is letter from a community-based organization vouching for a person's residency in the state of Washington. This could be a low barrier option for someone who's unable to provide any of the other options or documents that you've requested.
Perfect. Thank you, Emily. And again, if you could add that to your written comments letter, that would be very much appreciated.
Will do.
Great. Thank you. Any additional comments regarding establishing proof of residency?
Uh, Margaret Babayan for the record. No additional suggestions, but agreeing that having multiple forms for proof of identity is the best option. So thanking the department for that.
Thank you. And again, I would ask if you wouldn't mind, please submitting your comment in writing. Again, very much appreciated. And again, I wanted to reiterate that due to public rulemaking requirements, we do require that any testimony or comments that would like to be held on the record, that must be spoken. We are not looking at the chat or any of those functions for the purposes of this public meeting. Does anybody else have any comments?
Hi, sorry about that.
So sorry.
I'm just Leong for the record. I just had a question. I might have missed it, but would like enrollment in a Washington college also be proof of residency?
Good question. And if you wouldn't mind submitting your comment in writing, that would be something that we would very much like to consider.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Emily Bananek again. I will submit this in writing as well, but I do recommend that the department take testimonials of proof of residency at first and only prove residency if needed.
Thank you, Emily. Any additional comments?
Oh, this is Joseph Lockman again with Asian Counseling Referral Service. Again, echoing that we do appreciate flexibility with multiple forms, being offered as different options being offered, but also support the idea of the nonprofit organization testimonials. As again, in a situation similar to our organization, we do have many clients who work with case managers. Maybe in a this sort of position to help them access this kind of benefit through a letter. So, and of course, I will include this in my written submission.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Any other comments regarding proof of residency? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to establishing proof of income. So per the listening session, we were provided with several comments suggesting the following to establish proof of income eligibility: letters from employers, pay stubs, W-4s, W-2s, or other federal tax statements, the federal tax return, worker calendars with their hours and payments, IRS transcripts, SSI or public benefits verification letters, statements, affidavits, or testimonials from individuals, and bank statements. So please note that the division proposes to use the federal tax return or federal tax statements to calculate the remittance and to establish eligibility based on income. As it is currently a statutory requirement that applicants must file a individual income tax return to be considered eligible for the state credit, it seems that this would be the option that would provide the most consistent and transparent results for all individuals who apply. Excuse me. If there is a reason that this may not be preferable or may pose to be a significant impediment to those applying for the credits, we are now taking comments to establish this. So I will now open the floor to comments. Please be sure to identify yourself for the record regarding proof of income. Okay, so hearing no comments regarding proof of income, we'll now move on to proof of sales or use tax paid. The division will generally assume that those applicants who attest that sales or use tax has been paid during the period for which the remittance is being claimed have paid any amount of Washington sales or use tax. If the applicant is asked on the application to attest as to whether or not they have paid sales or use tax during the period in which they are requesting the credit, would this be sufficient? I now open the floor to comments, and again, please be sure to identify yourself for the record.
This is Emily Vananik, again, for the record, and I do believe that that would be sufficient.
Any comments regarding, any additional comments regarding proof of sales or use tax paid? Okay, hearing none, move on regarding documentation of qualifying child or children. Qualifying children must fulfill the federal earned income tax requirements to be considered for the state working families tax credit, with the exception that qualifying children may have a valid ITIN instead of a valid Social Security number to be eligible for the state credit. The division has recorded the feedback received during previous listening session and anticipates providing clarification on the following topics. First is regarding circumstances in which multiple people will attempt to claim the same qualifying child or children. Additionally, we propose to provide clarification regarding a qualifying child who may have a valid ITIN rather than a valid Social Security number. So please note that the division plans to incorporate the updates to the Federal Earned Income Tax Program made by the American Rescue Plan Act, or the ARPA, earlier this year. Of importance here is that the ARPA allows for taxpayers filing separately to receive the earned income tax credit so long as certain requirements are met. The division is considering proposing to allow applicants who file under the married filing separately status to provide clarification regarding these situations along with additional documentation requirements for this filing status. So regarding qualifying children or the married filing separately status, would there be any additional clarification that may be helpful or necessary for applicants who are applying for the credit? I will now open the floor for comments. And again, please be sure to identify yourself for the record.
Hi, Chelsea. This is Emily again. Emily Bananic. I am just wondering if you could repeat that question one more time. I didn't fully get it.
Oh, of course. So regarding the clarifications regarding qualifying children and also the married filing separately status, would there be any additional clarification that may be helpful or necessary for applicants who are applying for the credit?
This is Margaret Babayan for the record. The federal definition of qualifying child is reasonable in this case. I think the question is around what clarification might be needed, and if the department could clarify requirements publicly. Maybe it's not part of the rulemaking process, but for parents who are foster parents or have adoptees, would be helpful.
Great, thank you. And again, too, if you wouldn't mind submitting those comments in writing, that would be very much appreciated. So any additional comments? All right, hearing none, we'll move forward with application submission procedures. So to be considered eligible for the Working Families Tax Credit, applicants must file an application for the credit with the department. Regarding due dates or when the application is due, so per the listening session, most individuals indicated that a December 1st deadline in the calendar year after which the remittance is being claimed would be sufficient. It was also suggested that the division should expand the due dates to allow for the application to be filed at any time during the statutory non-claims period or to have this period align with federal requirements. The tax credit currently specifies that all applications must be made in the calendar year following the year for which the claim is being made. For example, an applicant who files a credit for 2022 must file their credit application before the end of 2023. This limits the division's authority to extend potential deadlines for original claims applications. However, so long as the applicant files their original claims application within the stated calendar year period, the division is considering proposing to allow the applicant to amend their claim at any point within the statutory non-claims period, which is 4 years before the beginning of the calendar year for which the remittance is being claimed. This is important if the applicant finds that they made a mistake or if they need to change their application for any reason. For example, they were under an IRS audit. So in addition to potentially providing examples, what other information would be helpful to include or what other situations can the department provide more clarity to better help applicants regarding due dates and amending their applications? So hearing no comments, I will move on specifically regarding procedures to amend the applications. So as we have indicated, the division is considering proposing to allow applicants to amend their original application for the full statutory non-claims period. Procedures and how applicants should amend their claims application will also be clarified. So is there any information that may be particularly helpful or any way that we can streamline the amendment process that you feel may benefit applicants? For example, would the creation of a specific form be helpful for this process, or is there another way that applicants could alert the department that a change is needed? I will now open the floor to comments. Again, please be sure to identify yourself for the record.
This is Emily Vananik. I think that a simplified form for amending the credit should be available to those who need to make slight adjustments. And ideally, if there is the ability to edit information on an online portal, that could help streamline the process as well.
Thank you. If you wouldn't mind including that as a written comment, that would be very much appreciated. Are there any additional comments regarding the amending process? Okay. Hearing none, we'll go forward to additional procedures. So once the application has been submitted, the department does have the right to review the application for potential errors and to ask for additional information if needed. So the department also does have the ability to audit these applications. The department has the authority to audit all working families' tax credit claims. If contacted, applicants are encouraged to promptly respond and to provide the requested documentation. If the applicant fails to provide documentation, or if the documentation is provided is insufficient to prove eligibility, the department will reject the applicant's claim in whole or in part. So what additional information regarding the audit process might be helpful to applicants who are applying for the credit? I will now open the floor to comments. And again, please be sure to identify yourself for the record.
Hi, this is Maya Manis. For the record, I would mention also or add include multiple attempts, at least three attempts before denying somebody benefits, just because many people might not have money to pay for their cell phone at said time or working or whatever the case may be. So I would suggest there should be multiple contact or multiple times to talk to them.
Thank you, Maya. That's a good comment. Would you mind submitting that in writing?
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional comments?
Yes, I have an additional comment. Margaret Babayan, for the record. Agreeing with Maya that there are a variety of reasons that the working families tax credit population, folks in this population might not be able to receive a notification. So multiple attempts, as well as multiple ways to contact a recipient, a potential recipient, would be helpful. For example, people who are lower income tend to move more often. So in the application process, getting a name, email, phone number to ensure that folks can be reached in different ways in case they do move and there's not a new address on record.
Perfect, great comment. Again, if you wouldn't mind submitting that in writing, it'd be very much appreciated. Any additional comments?
This is Joseph Lockman with Asian Counseling Referral Service again. And I'll, of course, submit this in writing, but I would like to also echo the sentiments from Margaret and Maya and some others that just taking into consideration the circumstances of many of the WFTC so eligible population is really making sure that there are multiple attempts at contacting applicants through multiple ways of contacting them, and also taking into account the need for language and cultural sensitivity when reaching out to these applicants. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. Any additional comments? Okay, moving on. After not hearing any comments, move on to appeals. So if the department, if it is the department's decision to deny the claim, or if the applicant disagrees with the department's audit determination, the applicant may appeal this decision. The department is currently working on updated our procedures for appeals of the working family tax credit claims in order to simplify and streamline our usual process. The department currently allows for administrative appeals hearings to be held via telephone, video conference, or via in-person meetings held at Tumwater or Seattle. Would any other means of having a hearing be helpful or appreciated? And as an additional follow-up, for in-person hearings, would it be helpful to include additional office locations, and if so, in which locations? I'll now open the floor to comments. And again, please be sure to identify yourself for the record.
This is Emily Bananek for the record. I think one consideration the department could have is to attend VITA free tax prep locations towards in the final 2 months of tax season for additional on-site support at operating locations, just to be able to reach folks more closely. Tumwater is, Tumwater and the other, I can't remember the other location that you mentioned, is just really limited. And some people will go out of their way to try to do an in-person appointment.
Perfect, thank you, Emily. And I assume that you'll just add this to your list of
it will for sure.
Perfect. Thank you. To clarify this item slightly, we're currently soliciting comments regarding the administrative appeals hearings. So, for example, if the department denies a claim, so after the application has been submitted and the audit or the audit process has been seen through to the end, if the applicant does disagree, they have the ability to then contest this this determination. So again, we currently have in-person meetings that are at Tumwater or Seattle for the purposes of applicants who wish to dispute the department's determination. If any other locations would be helpful, we would like to specifically know that as well. Again, opening the floor to any comments.
Hi, this is Margaret Papayan. Just echoing the two locations for folks that struggle with telephone or video conferencing technology, or might just prefer in person. I believe Tumwater is still in Western Washington, and just the fact that there aren't any locations in Eastern Washington would be a limiting factor. We would like to consult with other partners before submitting a final list and can follow up with a written comment or suggest locations that are more precise.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Any other comments regarding the appeals process or potentially other avenues to hold an administrative appeals hearing or other locations in which an in-person administrative appeals hearing could take place? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to collections. The department does have the authority to begin collection procedures and will work with applicants to establish a payment plan as necessary if the applicant ended up receiving more credit than they were entitled to receive. The department also has the authority to impose liens and levies if needed. So what other additional information regarding the collection process in the event of an overpayment might be helpful to applicants who are applying for the credit? I will now open the floor to comments. Please be sure to identify yourself for the record.
Hi, this is Margaret Babayan. I think I heard the question is what additional information? Sorry, actually, could you repeat the question just so I'm clear?
Oh, sure, no problem. What additional information regarding the collection process in the event of an overpayment of the credit might be helpful?
Thank you so much. I don't know if I can necessarily answer the additional information part, but I would echo that in the same vein as trying to contact folks in the event of an audit, some of the feedback that was given earlier about making multiple attempts and trying different mechanisms and doing so in a culturally and linguistically sensitive way would apply here as well, because something like a collections notice could be really scary for applicants, for any applicant at any income level, but especially if you are low income or applying with an ITIN. The other piece of information that I hope the department considers is the ability to forgive and not collect collections in the case that an applicant really is experiencing hardship. I believe that other state agencies do on a case-by-case basis this kind of forgiveness. And so I hope it would be possible to the Department of Revenue as well.
Great. Thanks, Margaret. And I assume that we can expect to maybe include this as well on your list of written comments.
Yes, of course.
Great. Thank you so much. Any additional comments?
This is Joseph Lachman, again, with Asian Counseling Referral Service. And again, echoing what Margaret has said, though, encouraging the same level of cultural linguistic sensitivity, making multiple attempts through different avenues And also taking into consideration the possibility of forgiveness, just when thinking about the working families tax credit, so eligible population again, would be very much appreciated. Thank you. And I will submit this in writing as part of the list.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Any additional comments? All right, hearing none, I'll just move on to some of the more general notes that we had regarding this proposed rule. So please note the department hopes to have a proposed rule draft by February 2022. If you do have any additional comments based on tonight's discussion, or if you think of something else, we encourage you to submit written comments before December 31st, 2021, so that these may be included in our preliminary draft. Once we file the preliminary draft of the rule, we will schedule a public hearing and provide additional opportunity for those interested to submit additional comments. The department proposes to make this rule for the Working Families Tax Credit less formalized and more easily accessible to individuals. For this, we plan to draft the rules using plain talk and to provide examples and diagrams to the extent possible to help explain the process. Is there anything else that you feel the department can do to make the rules more accessible for individuals who may be applying to this program? I will now open the floor to comments. Again, please be sure to identify yourself for the record.
Hi, this is Emily again, Emily Bananic. I will submit these with my written comments. I would recommend that more information become available earlier on prior to a public hearing meeting being set, including the at least a couple of weeks to be able to review the rules and expectations for how the meeting will be, like what platform the meeting's going to be held on, linguistic accessibility, and overall expectations for the meeting.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Any other comments?
Hi, in agreement with Emily, as much time in between a public hearing and the rule being posted would be appreciated. Additionally, this piece about linguistic access is really important for recipients. And I don't know if this is standard practice, likely not, but if the rule is able to be posted in multiple languages, especially those spoken by EITC recipients. If not the draft rule, then at the very least, translating the rule after its final approval and being posted very clearly, along with application would be best. Thank you.
Perfect. And if you could please also submit that in writing, again, greatly appreciated. Any additional comments? Okay, hearing none, we will move forward. So thank you all so much for your comments. Again, please remember, as mentioned earlier, we are best able to consider your comments in the rulemaking process if you provide them to us in writing to chelseab@dor@wa.gov. Thank you again for your comments and considerations. Before closing this public meeting, I will recap the rulemaking process. This has been the initial public meeting for input regarding the rule for the Working Families Tax Credit in the state of Washington. As a result of the comments received during public meetings, the department will draft a proposed rule. When drafting is completed, the draft is filed with the code reviser and is published in the state register, after which the public rulemaking hearing is held. After the hearing, additional changes may be made and the final draft is filed for adoption with the code reviser. Unlike today's public meeting and the public hearing, the final filing of the rule is not a public process. Rather, the final filing is just a filing of the notice of adoption. Absent an emergency adoption, or unless otherwise stated, a rule becomes effective 31 days after the filing for adoption. To the extent that rule changes are the result of a specific statutory change and such changes are effective on the effective date of the law change, regardless of when the rule is adopted. So thank you for participating in this public meeting. If you are not on the department's rules notification list, did not receive a notice of today's meeting directly from the department, and you want to be kept informed of future rulemaking activities related to this rule, please contact Keith Dacus with your name, mailing address, and email address. Keith can be contacted at keithd@dor.wa.gov, and that is keithd@dor.wa.gov. This public meeting is now adjourned. For the record, the time is now 7:30 p.m. Thank you so much, everybody.